The Mac's not a toy, but you can get it at Toys R Us.
We've got an interview with Mac Geek Cruise's Neil Bauman.
Steve Jobs is fine. He's not sick.
All this and more, Podcast 95.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast. Podcasting from the MyMac.com studios, it's your hosts, Tim Robertson and Chad Perry.
Yeah, we got a few minutes before we actually have to record our interview with Neil, and so let's go ahead and get things started, and it's bitch time on my part. I'm going to bitch.
Yeah, and you've got something worth bitching about. Why don't you let us know how things are at the Robertson
Comcast
household?
Comcast. I tell you, Comcast.
It's Comcraptic.
Why do you hate me so much, Comcast? Why? That's all I want to know.
Let them know what's going on.
Well, the whole node that I'm on seems to be down, right?
Yeah.
So I called them up on Monday, mm-hmm. and I'm like, dudes, I haven't been able to access and send anything via FTP in a week. If I download anything, it's like I'm on a 28.8 modem. I can barely browse the internet. It's been like this for a while. I keep calling. You guys keep saying, we don't see a problem. So finally they're like, oh yeah, we can definitely see there's some kind of a problem on your line, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you guys just came out a couple weeks ago and gave me a brand new cable modem.
Yeah.
That seemed to help for, I don't know, 5.5 seconds, and now it's crap again.
Mm-hmm.
So can we get someone out here and fix this? Well, the earliest, sir, we can get out there would be Sunday morning between 8 and noon. I'm like,
yeah.
So let me get this straight. I have to wait 6.5 days for you to come out here and fix this. Yeah, that's the soonest we can get out there. I'm like, well, is your infrastructure so crappy that you have to have constant repairs on it just to keep this ball of twain wound tight? I mean, what's going on? Why is it so long? Well, we just have a lot of installations.
Mm.
And I said, well, how about you fix your existing customers instead of going out and getting new customers? How about taking care of me? You guys get $150 a month from me. How about...
Yeah.
Taking care of my needs. Well, is your television down too? I said, no. I should have said yes.
Yeah.
She said, yeah, it's all fuzzy. I can't see anything, man. They probably would have ran right out there.
Yeah, they'd have gotten somebody out there, an emergency call.
Jesus, crazy. I'm really disappointed, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. So I'm behind on uploading articles at mymac.com.
Yep.
I'm falling farther and farther behind on just getting my email and having the time to
respond.
To respond.
Yeah.
We did get a reader feedback.
Oh, great.
A listener feedback. So let's mm-hmm. go ahead and play that real quick here. And again, if you guys want to get your comments on the MyMac.com podcast, you can do so.
Give us a call at 1-801-938-5559 or send us an MP3 at
tim@mymac.com.
Hi, my name is Ivan Marshall. I'm a faithful listener and I enjoy your show very much. I just wanted to make a comment. I'm from Southfield, Michigan. I wanted to make a comment about the Worldwide Developers Conference and things that were announced at the conference. I really like the Mac Pro and the things that are in it. The name is debatable, but going with the format that they've been going with so far, MacBook Pro, and the other machines, I could see them naming it MacBook if they want to make Mac and all the names. I don't have a problem with that. But the Leopard announcement seems to be very nice. I know they weren't going to give us all the features right now since it's not ready to come out. But the Mac Pro is an elegant machine. There's nothing wrong with the cheese grater enclosure. I like the enclosure. And especially now since the cooling issues are not there, they have space for more hard drives inside. It's aimed for the Sirius Pro. People who are crying about the price, if you're not a Sirius Pro, the price really doesn't affect you. If you are a Sirius Pro and you make your living with your machine, then I can understand them charging for that and making those features available. But for the people to complain, this is for long-term Mac users, myself included, for people to complain about G4 chips being dog slow, G5 chips being dog slow, they can't stand them, they're waiting for them to be corrected. Are replaced by Intel chips. Back when we were using G4 and G5 chips, Mac fans worldwide were bragging on how fast Mac computers were and how superior Motorola IBM G5 and G4 chips were. Those were great chips. They did a great job in all types of machines, machines that we paid $2,000 and $3,000 for as top-of-the-line G4 and G5s. Now, you want to consider them dog slow? They're not dog slow. They're fractionally slower than Intel Max. On native software, on some things like Photoshop, they're even faster. Intel machines are going to improve when those programs are updated. But those chips are not slow. They were called wicked fast. People did all types of video and animation and scientific research and all that on them. They're not slow. The new Corvette is faster than the old Corvette, but the old Corvette wasn't slow. And I'm saying the same thing about Macs. If you loved Macs before and bragged on them to everybody before, and they were using G4 chips, they weren't slow then, and they aren't slow now. I love the new machines. I hate that they can't run Classic, but admittedly, I haven't used Classic in a long time, and I know a lot of other Mac users haven't either. So I just got to move forward with the times. I have a PowerBook, and I also have a new Intel iMac, and I love it. I really do. And even though the new machines are faster and the new iMacs in the next 6 months to a year may have a faster chip, I got a 2 gigahertz chip with a 20-inch screen, a 250-gig hard drive. I got a gig of memory. I'm happy. Just one thing I want to ask. Do you think that an Intel iMac needs more than 1 gig of memory for you to really get the performance out of the machine that you're paying for? Thank you. You have a great podcast. Take care.
Thanks very much, Ivan. Let's start with the last thing he was talking about.
Yep.
Do you need more than 1 gigabyte of RAM in an Intel Mac to get the best performance? Chances are, no.
No.
Most of the time, a gig of RAM is going to be sufficient for everyday needs. But let's back up and preface that by saying, if you're doing some video work, or you're having multiple applications over 10 at a time open, the more RAM, the better. Now, you can never have too much RAM, obviously.
Right.
That's why I maxed out my G4 or my G5 to 4 gigs total. I mean, the more RAM, the better.
We did the same thing with my G5 sitting here. We finally did that upgrade and made a significant difference.
What is yours? Yours at 3.5 or 4?
I'm at, I think I'm at 3.
You're at 3 gigs?
Yeah.
So the more RAM, the better. I think, at least as far as the G5s and the G4s are concerned, the more RAM, the more stable the machine.
Right.
And as RAM prices are really low compared to what they were just a few years ago. So it doesn't hurt to have more RAM. But do you need more RAM than a gig in a typical Intel Mac setup? And I would say no. I don't think you probably do.
But when I went and did my MacBook upgrade and went from the standard 512 up to the full 2, I just decided to just go ahead and jump in both feet because eventually I'm going to want it, and I may as well just pay a little extra money now and just get it done with.
Yep, just, you know, bite the bullet and get it done. You're gonna be popping it open anyways, and if you can afford the little extra memory, what the heck, why not? Going farther back in his comments, I have to absolutely agree with...
Yeah, Ivan was absolutely correct about the way people were talking about the new Intels versus the old G5s.
Yeah, everybody wants to act like the older G4s and G5s are some dog-slow machine now, and Intel's it. Well, yeah, sure, maybe some of the Intels are faster. Like, for instance, your MacBook is much faster than your iBook was.
Right.
But you were going from a G3 to an Intel.
Right.
So that was a significant speed boost. And if you wait that long between upgrading machines, you're going to see a difference. Mm-hmm. But if you're going from a 2.5 gigahertz dual processor G5 to the new Mac Pros, I don't think, for the most part, you're going to notice much speed difference because there isn't much of a speed difference.
Yeah.
Not really. Not in real world. I mean, sure, you can make the benchmark scores pretty much look like anything you want them to. If you manipulate it enough and you publish the benchmarks that really focus on what you want it to focus on, you can make it look like anything.
I remember John Dvorak was talking about that on This Week in Tech. Leo and he were talking about processor speeds, and I think Dvorak is right. It really comes down to just a gut feeling. You either feel like it's faster or you don't.
I've heard before in the past that if the actual speed increase is not at least 30%, you don't perceive it being any faster.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, for the most part, for most users, where do you see the speed increases noticeably? When you launch an application. Mm-hmm. Well, let's say you launch Safari on a Mac Pro, and it takes one bounce and it's up.
Yep.
You'll launch it on a 2.5 gigahertz G5, mm-hmm. and it takes 1.5 bounces. I don't know how, what's it going to stay up when it's up? But you get my meaning.
Right.
It's just a split second slower.
Mm-hmm.
So what? I mean, okay, maybe if you add up those seconds over the life of the machine, but still, you're still sitting in the same chair.
Well, and the fact is, your network connection speed is going to have more impact on net perception than the actual speed of the machine.
Absolutely. And that goes with any computer you're using. I mean, once the application is running, the web browser is going to be either fast because you have a fast connection, or it's going to be dog slow because you're on a modem.
Yep.
You know, so that's where the speed increases and decreases. But I got to say, he's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not diss the old machines.
Yep.
Because personally, I've got some older machines, and they're still in everyday use.
I have no intention of abandoning my G5 right now.
No.
It's still going to be my workhorse.
I don't see a need for myself to upgrade to a Mac Pro anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to upgrade to the MacBook Pro for the most part so I could test Intel-ready applications. I mean, if you're running a website and you get as many hits as we do, I kind of need to be able to test that and say it runs just as well on a PowerPC as an Intel chip. And, but, you know, I came from a 1 gigahertz PowerBook G4, the aluminum book.
Mm-hmm.
It was about a year and a half old, tops. And I went to a dual-core 2 gigahertz Intel chip. Is it faster? Yeah, it is faster. And I do see a difference. But for everyday use, I never quit my applications on that PowerBook anyway, so they were already open.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, it seemed like my G4 or my G4 PowerBook would get on the wireless network twice as fast as the MacBook Pro seems to. Mm-hmm. The MacBook Pro seems to take more time looking for my wireless network, so I'm sitting there waiting. I'm clicking, you know, the home page button to load the web page to see if it's connected to the wireless network. Mm-hmm. I seem to be waiting more for the MacBook Pro to find the network, and I can start browsing, than the PowerBook G4.
Well, that and it won't leave first or second degree burns on your thighs. So.
Well, yeah, I'm not sterile after using the PowerBook, but I'm starting to become with the... But, you know, I will say this, though, and I know I've complained about how hot the MacBook Pro is in the past. There's one positive side effect to that.
Yeah.
You get off the computer quicker and get back to real life.
This is true.
You know, you're like, this is too hot. I got to take it off. Mm-hmm. My thighs are sweating.
Mm-hmm.
Go spend more time with the kids.
Yeah.
Not that I was excluding time with the kids to begin with, because I don't.
I
spend just as much time with them as anything than I ever would, even if the Mac's working or not. But I think for a lot of people, that would probably be a bonus. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got that sucker in your lap and it's getting warm, time to close it. And you've got to leave it closed for at least a half hour for it to cool down.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're looking for our interviewee, and we're going to take a break here. We do want to say that this podcast is sponsored by Small Dog Electronics. Check out smalldog.com.
Also by Ramjet. If you're looking for RAM for your computer or other upgrades, check out ramjet.com.
They do have hard drives, and everybody listening is going to need a hard drive. Either an internal one if you have a Mac Pro, or an external one for everything else, because there is no other Macs other than the Mac Pro that can handle an internal hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Because Time Machine, coming out with 10.5, does require an external hard drive, or an internal one, but it has to be a secondary drive.
Ah.
And I understand it may not even work if you segment your drive.
So you really do need a separate drive.
Well, what's the point in a backup to a segmented hard drive if the hard drive goes bad?
You still lose everything.
You lost your backup, too. So you have to have... And you know what? Hard drives are so cheap. Ramjet has them real cheap.
Yep.
So, and we're not saying they're cheap hard drives. Cheap only in price.
Price.
And it should be something that's on everyone's must-have list. If you don't have external hard drive media, you really do need it. You got to back up.
Yep.
You just have to. Everybody's taking pictures and downloading songs. If you don't have a copy of that on an external hard drive, or at the very least, a CD or DVD, you're just asking for trouble. And then when something does happen, and guess what? It will happen. I'm not saying your Mac is going to die tomorrow, but eventually it will die. You're going to lose every bit of information that's on that hard drive. It's going to happen. A hard drive is a moving part.
Right.
And a very delicate one at that. It's going to fail. Please, Don't blame that, and don't blame the Macintosh. Stupid Macintosh, piece of junk. Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't a piece of junk when you first got it. It worked great.
Right.
But a hard drive is a moving thing. You got to have a backup. Mm-hmm. So assume that your hard drive and everything on it eventually is going to go bye-bye. And with this new program from Apple,
Time Machine,
looks like it's going to be a good way to back up easily. Mm-hmm. So if your machine does go down, you have to get a new hard drive for it.
The
external hard drive is right. I wonder how it's going to back up. This is a question that I had. Let's say, I don't know, I've installed some software on my machine, or it's just getting buggy. But you know what? 2 days ago, it wasn't buggy at all. Can I time warp back my entire system, getting rid of anything new on it? Time warp to a previous condition of the computer, not just, oh, I need to go back 3 days and pull this graphic that I accidentally deleted without meaning to.
Right.
Or an email or a picture, whatever it is. I want to take my entire system back in time 2 days because it was stable and it worked. Maybe I completely screwed up and installed some stuff that I shouldn't have. Apple hasn't done a really good job of communicating that type of an ability within Time Machine in 10.5 yet. Now, obviously, they just released, according to them, only some of the details in 10.5.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm really curious about. And I know there are window machines that can do that. There's some programs that will allow you to go back in time to a previous state of a computer.
I've had it happen to me at work. So.
And it works. It absolutely works. If Time Machine doesn't do that, I think it's somewhat of a disappointment.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the entire application is, because just the ability to back up and quickly retrieve information is a godsend for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's going to become increasingly important as we move into a lot more digital media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything that we're doing is going digital. But to be able to take my whole Mac back a couple days, that's what I want. That's what I want Time Machine to do.
Well, we'll have to wait and see then.
Yeah, we've got a little ways to wait, too. So thank you, Small Dog Electronics, and thank you, Ramjet.com, as well as our host provider, Innotech.com, INNO-TECH. If you're looking for a place to host your website,
they are the place to go. That's Innotech.com. And we're here with Neil Bauman. Neil is the captain and CEO of International Technology Conferences, Incorporated, better known as Geek Cruises. So how are you, Captain Neil?
I'm great, Chad. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
All right, I have a question. Now, this is an actual cruise. This is not like a rowboat that Chad and I go out and try to pick up stray Wi-Fi signals on our laptops, right?
It's correct, Tim.
We knew that, actually.
It's been known to be done. Randall Schwartz, one of the geekiest guys you'll ever meet, Perl expert, Linux, Unix expert, actually does troll the airs for roaming passwords and things of that sort, just for the sport of it. And he actually has written people's passwords down to their email accounts and handed it to them.
Yeah, that's always fun to do.
Right, waves his finger. You're not sending that in a secure way.
Let's go back in time a little bit before we get up to date with Mac Cruises, Geek Cruises, I should say. Is it Mac?
It's
Mac,
Geek Cruises.
It's Geek Cruises.
Geek Cruises, Mac Mania is
that's
our
right.
Mac Cruise.
I always just want to say the Mac Cruise because that's how I think of it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Let's go back in time. What was the first computer that you bought?
That was an HP 65 in 1972.
Why'd you buy it?
Well, I really wanted it. I was trying to learn a program. I was they were creating a library of applications that they were distributing to other HP 65 owners, so it was a chance for me to publish software. And I was actually at the time I was working on a very tough problem. Someone had challenged me my junior year in high school to solve I to the I. And I, as you may remember from your basic math, is the square root of -1. So the question is, what do you what is the value if you take that and raise it to the power of I? And so I was I bought the calculator to help me solve that problem.
How long was it before you realized that this computer thing could actually be life-changing? Or has it got to that point for you yet?
Oh, I should say it was fairly life-changing in college. And I had a sense, matter of fact, I told my friends in college that this was in 1976, 75, that by the year 2000, I said everyone would have a computer and they would all be free. And we would all be communicating via computers. And I had a part-time job in college getting paid to do programming, and I was getting much more money for that than any of the other people that had part-time jobs at college at that time. So I had a real sense that this was a good way to make a living out of college.
If you could take one electronic gear thing with you, and go back in time and meet yourself in college when you were making those predictions, what would be the one item you would take back and say, check this out?
Well, I think it would be the Mac. It's really an exceptional piece of gear, as we all know. Although today, you know, a white screen with black letters on it, it is a lot more common than it was back then, but you know, the GUI interface is really extraordinary. Really, no one I think anticipated it. Even though back then, about 1977, the mouse was invented, I'm not so certain that anyone had a sense as to the real practical essence of a GUI interface.
A trackpad would have almost seemed like magic back then.
Yeah.
No question about that. I mean, multiple windows, pictures, color. I mean, all of that stuff would have seemed unbelievable. And of course, the speed. There's more speed in my little laptop G4 here than there was in the top of the line Cray computer back then.
What part of the Mac, if you can go back in time, what part of your college self would be most impressed with the Mac? Would it be editing video or looking at pictures or playing music or just the interface itself? What part of your college self would go, holy crap?
One of the things that got me into computers and that I enjoyed so much was playing them chess in high school. And the fact that the chess program on this laptop, which plays at a really fast pace, is better than all experts on the planet today, I think would be the most extraordinary, exceptional thing. I was not particularly into photos. Actually, I had a camera. I mean, that aspect is amazing. But I wasn't so into photography that it would have knocked me off my chair. I think just the overall abilities. I mean, to me, of course, mail, I live by mail. We all live by mail today.
Absolutely.
I use MailSmith from BPDEd. I mean, this, to me, is a life-changing application. But I don't think that I would have had any basis for understanding, you know, the effect of or the need for email back then.
So, I mean, obviously you've been doing this, working with computers for, well, over 30 years now.
30 years, a little over 30 years.
What's been the biggest leap forward in computing, in your opinion?
That's an excellent question, and I think grid computing, the fact that that they've made massively large computers by tying together computers, and while that does solve a lot of large scientific problems, it makes for very large websites to exist. I mean, you can have literally 100,000 people hit Amazon all at the same time, and the speed that any one particular user experiences is pretty high, is really high. And I don't know that this was something that any of us could have expected a while ago. And I think today it's still a miracle when you think about the delivering web pages and graphics and audio and even video clips now from Amazon. It's exceptional. It's unbelievable.
What gave you the idea to take a whole bunch of geeks, throw them on a big cruise ship, and go sailing with them? Where did that come from?
Well, it was a combination of things. I had been on a cruise for fun the summer of 98. It was a Star Trek cruise, so it was sort of a geeky thing already. And
we don't use the term geeks as in the negative connotation,
right,
at all.
We're geeks. Right. It's actually a term of endearment, I think.
Geeks rule the world now. Just look at the movies. All the movies are geared towards geeks. Everything is.
Well, interestingly, I've broadened the definition of geek to be something of a general nature. And I'm not so sure I'm the one that did it, but when President, I think it was Reagan, was in power, His chief of staff at one point was a guy by the name of Sununu.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he was in office, he declared himself a geek. But his particular geekism is engineering. I think he has a degree in engineering, as opposed to computers. And he was referring to the fact that he was just sort of technically oriented or focused. And almost all intellectual endeavors have some technical component to them. So I've broadened that a little bit to be a geek is someone who's just very passionate about something that requires some educational understanding. In any event, so I was on the Star Trek, to answer your question, I was on a Star Trek cruise, and I spent my time reading on the deck of my cabin, reading some Perl programming books when I was not in class, of course, geeking out with the Treks.
Sure.
Trekkies. And just sort of sitting there with this book on my lap, all of a sudden, one moment, it just said, duh, you know, I should be bringing on a bunch of computer people to do this. And rather than have Sulu and Chekhov and people like that running around, we should have Randall Schwartz, Larry Wall, and so on, the people that created Perl, the great names of Perl. And shortly after I came back from that cruise, I started inviting these people and putting it together.
So when was the first Mac cruise? What year, 99?
Mac cruise, I think, was 2001, maybe 02. I'd have to go look online, but we're doing Mac 5 now, or this October, so 6. So I guess it was probably March of 01, or May of 01.
Now, if somebody is thinking about, wow, this is just a fantastic idea, going on a cruise, and it's has this Mac theme, what sort of things could they expect if they get on the ship?
Well, the cruise experience itself is extraordinary, is excellent, and that's one whole level of answer to your question. But I think, and I'd like to address some of that if I could, but I think the first part of the answer would be, you know, what's the Mac Mania experience like? And what they can expect is when we're at sea, when the ship is sailing, and it's between the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m., they will be in class. And we typically run three tracks at the same time, so they'll have a few classes to choose from. And obviously classes, this is something that they would be somewhat used to if having been to any conference, except that our classes are smaller. They're not these massive rooms with hundreds of people. And the speakers are readily accessible, not only during the day, but before and after class and throughout the whole week. Then from 5:30 to 8 o'clock in the evening, again, when we're at sea, they can expect some geek entertainment. We'll run, we've done all sorts of things, like Steve Wozniak has chatted to the group for an hour or two here and there. David Pogue has done song and dance with the piano, magic tricks. Leo Laporte will flash up his favorite little widgets and things of that sort. I mean, we had Chris Breen, Bob Levitis, and Andy Anatko sing and play musical instruments. We typically are running an Ingenious Bar for one of those hours, usually from 6 to 7, and that's usually hosted by Leo, but we have other of our speakers man that as well. And it's usually done in a bar, and it's somewhat informal, and everyone sort of gets together, hangs out, and they get to ask their specific technical questions, or not so technical questions, what's going on at Apple kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on. And that, actually, let me continue with the evening. And it doesn't matter whether we're now at sea or docked somewhere. Dinner is served at 8:15, plus or minus 15 minutes. And we all sit together as a group. And this is just a great, great time. This is when you really get to sit and relax and enjoy people's company. And I tend to move people around in the dining room a bit, so a lot of people get to meet a lot of other people. And I think this is one of the favorite aspects of the event. It's remarkable that no matter where we are or how old we are or what we do in our day jobs, the Mac is such a strong binding experience for us that we sort of feel we're among friends very quickly. And indeed, what you get is this community doesn't quite express it strongly enough. This wonderful bonding experience that everyone has with everyone. Living together for a week and vacationing and going to these extraordinary places and being around these great minds and these famous speakers and authors. And what you walk away with from this thing is just having had a great, great time. An exceptionally phenomenal time. Now, the second part, of course, was the first part of the conference, and the second is just the cruising experience, which is just great. It's a Holland America, which is generally what I use. I've used it for all the Macs except for one. It's a first-class line. The beds are like these thick beds in Westin hotels, the heavenly beds. The food is excellent. The service is great. You're catered to death. This cabin steward comes in your cabin at least twice a day. Every time you turn around, you've got fresh towels. Your bed is made, and your clothes are folded, and they're put in the corner of your bed or hung up in the closet. It's sort of the king for a day or queen for a day experience for seven consecutive days.
Sounds fantastic.
Room service, it really is. Room service is wonderful and free. There are several bars. Obviously, the liquor's not free, but wherever you go, you're going to run into other geek cruisers, so you're going to have someone pleasant and interesting to chat with. And see, when you just throw it all together at the end of a week, you've just had this amazing, what I think is a life-changing experience.
Well, I could say from a personal experience, I want to go. I haven't been able to afford it yet, yeah. But this is definitely something that I do plan to do sometime in the future. It just sounds like a fantastic time.
Obviously, anyone you've spoken to has spoken very highly of it. And, you know, they're not cheap, but they're not expensive. You can do a Caribbean Mac cruise for about $1,000 a person for the berth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, if there's two of you, you're paying for two of those. And then the conference fee is $7.95. Now, if you're traveling with someone who's not attending the classes in the day, anything that goes on from 6 p.m. and later is open to everyone in your group. So the Ingenious Bar or the David Polk Entertainment or any of that sort of stuff is open to them. So they get the full breadth of the Geekers experience. So if you've got two people that are willing to take a relatively modest room and one conference fee, for less than $3,000, you're getting room and food and entertainment and education for a week.
Have you ever had anyone get married on the cruise ship?
No, not on the ship itself, but off... actually, I shouldn't say that. I have participated in a marriage, a geek cruise marriage on the ship. generally, it's not done the way you would think. You know, it's not done by the captain. I suspect that legally he may do it, but the laws in a lot of states today are a lot stricter than they were when, you know, that romantic idea was put into play. what they do is they bring on a justice of the peace in one of the ports, and that person comes on into generally the library or some nice room and performs the ceremony there. And if the captain is invited, he'll often attend or show up at the party afterwards, particularly since these weddings are occurring when the ship is not moving, because the justice of the peace is coming on, performing the ceremony, and then getting back off the ship.
I wanted to ask you a question about... sorry.
We've had actually two groups of people married, get married on a geek cruise.
Cool. I was going to ask you, how broad is your demographic for geek cruises, and is it getting broader? As far as how wide a span of people are you pulling in from around the United States or North America or the world? Or
the demographic, that's a great question. Thanks for asking. The demographic is huge. It's worldwide. I've had people from Japan, Eastern Bloc countries, many European countries, France, Portugal, Spain, Italy, Germany, London. They're Israel, countries really all over the world. It's been extraordinary. And the age is just diverse. I've had people 90 years old sign up for classes. And I've had as young as 6 years old sign up for classes.
No, that doesn't surprise me, the young ones. I tell you, the young ones nowadays, they're going to need to know computers much more thoroughly than we ever will.
Yeah.
Well, yes, although the young ones have been... the most popular cruise for the youngest are my chess cruises, where it's pretty common for six-year-olds to start getting serious about the game. I think there are a lot of six-year-olds that love their Mac, but it's probably more as a game-playing machine than as a photo manipulation device. That's sort of age and country. But in terms of interest, geek cruises is broadening quite a bit. In the very beginning, we did nothing but cruises for programmers, and our Mac cruise was really my first consumer cruise. And today, it's just one of many. You'll see on my website right now, I have a cruise for Shakespeare lovers, for opera lovers, chess players, digital photographers, PC users of all things, Photoshop users,
Linux.
Aperture users, Linux, and Linux geeks. So I still do the occasional cruise for the really high-end geek, for the serious technical person. I'm doing most of my cruises for a larger and larger range of interests outside of the computer field.
Sounds like something that's just super interesting. I can't imagine getting into something like that. I don't know how you came up with this idea, and it seems to be growing and growing and growing for you, and I just want to congratulate you on doing such a fantastic thing.
Well, thanks a lot. It's been just tremendous fun. I love cruising, and I love bringing cruising into people's lives, and I love traveling with the groups that I'm with. These are all very bright people that are willing to spend money on top of a vacation expense to educate themselves, to enrich themselves. And so we end up getting a very bright group of people all the time, and that makes it a stimulating, fascinating, rewarding, exciting. It's just awesome.
If you're interested in taking a geek cruise, check out geekcruises.com. Go to My Mac Podcast number 95 show notes. We'll have a direct link to the site. And there's going to be a cruise that you're going to want to take, whether it's a Photoshop, whether it's Mac, whether it's PC, Opera, Linux, Shakespeare,
chess.
You name it. Chess, absolutely. It looks like Geek Cruises got your hookup. Thanks a lot, Neil, for coming on to the show today, talking a little bit about Mac Cruises, and we want to wish you bon voyage.
Thanks a lot, Tim, and thanks, Chad.
Time for some Apple news. August 16th, Apple releases Bootcamp 1.1 Beta. Apple has released Bootcamp 1.1 Beta, the latest release of the company's software that enables Intel-based Macs to run Windows XP.
Of this release, the company notes Bootcamp 1.1 beta contains many updates and is intended for all new and previous Bootcamp beta users. Bootcamp 1.1 beta includes
support for the latest Intel Mac-based Macintosh computers, which is going to be the Mac Pros, yeah.
Easier partitioning using presets for popular sizes.
The ability to install Windows XP on any internal disk, which is much better than having to segment the main Mac drive. You can, if you have another drive in there, you can install it on that.
EyeSight camera support.
Built-in support for microphones, finally.
Right-click when pressing the right-hand Apple key on Apple keyboards.
And improved Apple keyboard support, including delete, print screen, screen, num lock, and scroll lock keys. So, some minor stuff, some major stuff. Mm-hmm. It's still beta software, let's not forget.
Yep.
If you're using Bootcamp, you're going to want to update. Macs for sale in the UK. This is coming from Mac Minute on August 16th.
A Mac Minute reader, Matthew Blessed, dropped a line to Mac Minute to say that it is the first time he has seen iPods, Macs, the MacBook, Mac Mini, and iMacs for sale at Toys R Us in the UK.
They have their own sales unit, about 4 foot square, and appear to be the only actual computers on sale in the store. Apart from Xboxes and PlayStation, they were on display, they were display models to try, as well as accessories for Mac and iPod. So, Toys R Us is getting Macs now?
Wow.
I'd like to confirm that. And
I would, too. That'd be interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, Apple, for a long time, tried to stay away from the Macs or Toys thing, and now they're for sale at Toys R Us?
Mm-hmm, at least in the UK.
If it sells more Macs, I'm sure Apple's all for it.
Yep. Next, Tweeter launches iPod trade-in program. Tweeter Home Entertainment Group and Nextworth Solutions today announced a partnership to offer Nextworth's iPod trade-in service at all 153 Tweeter stores in the U.S.
Never heard of a Tweeter store before.
Together with Nextworth, Tweeter has broken new ground by being the first United States-based retail chain to offer an in-store iPod trade-in program to consumers, notes the release.
Our iPod trade-in program reflects our desire to offer our customers a hassle-free way to capture the current value of their iPods and apply it to new technologies or products they're shopping for. The vice president of the general merchandising said,
"We accept a customer's iPod in just about any condition, inspect it, and award the customer credit on the spot."
That's pretty cool. So wow. If you've got a tweener electronics store in your area, hey, go in and trade in your old iPod and get a credit for a new iPod.
Yeah.
Avid is going to enhance support for Intel-based Macs, reports Mac Minute on August 16th.
Avid Technology today announced its plans to expand its range of video and audio content creation solutions that will be available for Intel-based Mac systems, including the new Mac Pro workstation.
You know, that's stuff that's everybody's expecting that. So yeah. It's like Avid is definitely on board. They're going to continue to support and go ahead and support the new Mac. So that's always a good thing. Yep. Avid's an important player in the Mac market.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Apple says Steve Jobs' health is robust.
Following rumors of Apple CEO Steve Jobs' deteriorating health, the company has issued a statement saying he is fine, notes Macworld UK. Many Mac watchers noted that Jobs appeared thinner and somewhat less energized than before. Their observations led many to speculate that Jobs may be unwell.
Some pundits voiced concern based on Jobs' pancreatic cancer operation in 2004, notes the story. However, the operation was a complete success. Apple's Vice President of Corporate Communications, Katie Cotton, issued in a statement. Okay, Steve's health is robust, and we have no idea where these rumors are coming from, reports Apple.
Yep.
So knock it off, people. Steve Jobs is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Stop the crappy rumor mongering. Oh, he looks sick on stage. You know
that's what? A weird rumor.
You know what happens is he doesn't seem as energetic as he does sometimes. Well, I'm sorry. He's
Nobody
not
does.
Like a 25-year-old guy anymore. Hell, he's not even 35. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy to get up on stage and, you know, he's not up there for your entertainment, people. He's not your little dancing monkey, okay? He's not a little dancing clown. He's the CEO of a major, very important American corporation. And he's up there to give a professional presentation. He's not up there to dance for you and go, one more thing all the time. One more thing, one more thing. He's not there for your entertainment. The keynotes are not entertaining. It's informative.
Mm-hmm.
He looks sick. Shut up, you little tweeny head. I just made up that word.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
And this from the Mac Observer, Sony laptop battery investigation launched.
Following Dell's recall of 4.1 million Sony-made laptop batteries that pose a potential fire hazard, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission has launched an investigation into other batteries made by Sony. Yahoo News reports the commission's commission spokesperson, Scott Wolfson, said,
"We are looking at the complete scope of the batteries made by Sony to ensure that no other consumers are in harm's way."
Dell recently issued the battery recall after one of its laptops burst into flame in June.
Sony manufactured the battery for Dell, and it also makes batteries for other companies like Apple, Hewlett-Packard, and Lenovo. So far, there is no indication that the batteries Sony made for Apple pose any hazard. To be safe, however, Apple is conducting its own investigation.
Recalling 4.1 million batteries is the largest consumer electronics recall in the history of the computing platform.
Wow.
Did you know that? I know that wasn't in the story, but I knew that, yeah. So that's the news this week, at least from the outside. We do have some news about MyMac.com. Of course, as I talked about on the mini podcast 3 and 4 and MyMac podcast number 94, we are doing our 100th episode live from the Apple Store in Grand Rapids, Michigan on September 23rd, 2006 at 3 p.m. So we definitely want to have you, the listeners, come out if you live in Michigan or the surrounding area. Obviously, we don't expect someone from San Francisco to fly in or anything like that. But if you live in the area on September 23rd, that's a Saturday, correct? We'd really appreciate it if you could come to the Apple Store and get some free stuff.
Plus, we'd like to actually meet you in person. Even though I won't be there, we will. We do have a Chad for the Day co-host for Tim.
Yep. What's going on is, it's not that I was nervous of doing a podcast by myself. I mean, I've done them before.
Right.
In a crowd, I think would actually be easier for me because I can really engage the crowd. I'm pretty good at that stuff. But this came out of the blue. I had no idea this person would even consider doing it,
alone
book the plane, get the hotel room. It's all set. There is going to be another host at the MyMac Podcast 100th episode.
Should we do it a surprise?
No.
Okay.
Guy Searle from the Dashboard Minute fame and soon Not Mac News is going to be with me in Grand Rapids on that show.
That's fantastic. That's awesome.
I think Guy has a better voice and more talent doing a podcast than I do, so maybe I'll be the co-host and he will be the host for that event. We're also planning on, we're in preliminary talks with another pretty famous Mac user that lives in Grand Rapids, and he runs a website dedicated to older Macs. And I am in talks with him, and it looks like we're probably going to go early to his house that morning and do an interview with him for a future podcast.
Cool.
That ought to be pretty cool, too. But I'm really looking forward to meeting Guy in person. I've never met Guy. I know he's taller than me, so I'm going to wear some really tall shoes so I can...
Some of those big old platform sneakers.
Yeah, like Kiss used to wear, and, or the disco ones with the fish in the heels. That would be cool. So, again, it's going to be on a Saturday, and it's about, what, 5 weeks from now?
Yeah.
September 23rd. Grand Rapids, Michigan, the Apple Store. Yes, we're not just standing outside the Apple Store. This is going to be an event where we're inside the Apple Store. We're not invading. They know we're coming. I will tell you something that we are giving away.
Yeah.
Some Microsoft products.
Cool.
We're going to go into the Apple Store and give away Microsoft stuff. We're going to give away the Laser Desktop Mac and keyboard, or Mac keyboard and mouse, I should say.
Yep.
And we're also going to give away at least one copy of Office 2004.
And thanks again to Microsoft for...
Yeah, definitely thank you to Microsoft for supporting us and sending out some free goodies for us to give away. And it's not a contest. We're just going to give stuff away.
Yep.
So if you're in real need of Office 2004, show up with a walker. You know, act like you're just incredibly hurtful pain to be there. And I just came hoping, praying I can get a free copy of Office. And Guy's a sucker. Guy will be like, Tim, we got to give it to this old lady over here. And I'm like, that's not an old lady. He's about 25. He's lying. Come on. Come on, Guy. So, no, in all seriousness, though, we've got a couple iPod cases. We've got some Griffin Technologies stuff to give away. It's going to be really cool. It's mm-hmm. going to be a whole lot of fun. I wish Chad was going to be there, but
I do too.
Family stuff comes first,
yeah,
always. So thanks for listening this week. We'll be back on Monday with a Mac Mini podcast, number 5, and then Chad and I will be back next Thursday with podcast 96.
And we should have Vern Seward on this time.
That would be really cool. Vern just couldn't make it last week, unfortunately. Yep. I was really looking forward to it, so we'll get him on the show and grill him. Where were you? Why didn't you show up? Why don't you love me? Wrong show.
Yeah.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.